This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for November the 10th, 2005. I'm Jay Pierce. In a few moments, we'll be talking about the commodity markets with Dale Durkholz of AgriVisor Services, Bloomington, Illinois. Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing, located at the elevator in Lexington, will join us closer to the bottom of the hour as we take a look at the cash grain reports. Well, we have the production reports coming out today. We'll take a look at some of those numbers, get some reaction. And also some comments today following this week's WTO meetings in Europe. U.S. Trade Representative Rod Portman and Ag Secretary Mike Johanns saying that they have lowered their expectations for next month's key Doha round meeting in Hong Kong. Details coming up shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear from Todd Gleason on assignment at the National Association of Farm Broadcasters Convention in Kansas City, and he'll bring us some interesting news from the farm credit system and a recent survey of young farmers. Surprisingly, it shows access to credit is not chief among their concerns. This all happens on this November Crop Production Report Day edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Well, let's take a look at how some of the prices ended up on the Chicago Board of Trade today. The December wheat contract down 5 1/4 at 309 3/4. March also down 5 1/4. At 326, December corn down 1 1/2 at 390. Make that 193 3/4, down 1 1/2. And March also down 1 1/2 at 208. May down 2 at 215 3/4. December down 1 1/2 at 241 3/4. November soybeans down 1 1/4 on the close at 577. January down 1 at 587 1/2. March down 2 at 594. November down 2 3/4 at 608 1/4. The soybean meal for December, 175.50 down, make that up 120. And then the December oil contract, though, down 19 at 22.77. And looking quickly at some of the highlights, USDA pegging the 05-06 wheat ending stocks at 530 million bushels, unchanged from October, but the low end of the analysts' estimates. Corn production total 11.032 billion bushels. That was up from the October estimate of 10.857. And the soybeans, this year's crop pegged by the USDA in the report today at 3.043 billion bushels, above the government's October forecast of 2.967. It also raised stocks estimate to 350 million bushels from 260 million last month. And the soy meal and stocks estimate for soy meal unchanged at 250,000 tons. Even though it increased the domestic crush to 1.720 million bushels from the 1.695 million last month, soy oil stocks for the 05-06 crop year up to 1.891 billion pounds from 1.641 billion last month. And let's bring Dale Durkholz into the conversation here from AgriVisor Services in Bloomington. Good afternoon, Dale.
Good afternoon to you.
Well, what kind of reaction have you been seeing to this morning's numbers?
Well, a lot of people have been playing the negative side to the morning numbers. You know, they were bigger than the trade anticipated, especially the soybean complex. The jump we had there in the production estimate of something like about 80 million bushel, and then adding something in the vicinity of about 90 million bushel to carry out, you know, tended to diminish the odds that we're going to be able to get much of a spark to the upside in this market, because it puts us in a little bit more comfortable supply-demand balance environment here for the foreseeable future anyway. So The markets traded defensively through most of the day, but interestingly enough, I mean, the beans, even though we had some negative news and were trading as much as roughly 10 lower during the day, ended up closing somewhere in the ballpark of about a penny down, and actually were higher on the day late in the session. So it kind of looks like, you know, some of the interest in selling into the market pretty hard really was not all that strong in the end.
Mm-hmm. What about the soy meal for December? That kind of bucked the trend and did end up.
Yeah, it did end up. You know, we've been seeing a thing here in the meal market. This has been going on now for about the past couple of weeks, where we've been seeing some more active buying interest in it. And basis levels are still a little bit sloppy, but they had started to firm up in some of the cash meal markets here in the Midwest. And so, you know, it finally became a game where we're seeing end users step into this, looking at the value of meal itself being reasonably good, even on a long-term basis, and are just reaching out and finally starting to cover their needs. You know, there'd been some pent-up buying, really, in that meal complex, and they're just waiting to happen. And the market never really found any traction, and especially when you start to hear stories about yields coming in a little bit better than expected for beans. You know, they just kind of kept pushing purchases off and going very hand-to-mouth. Well, now they're starting to reach out and starting to push those forward, and maybe just a little bit more aggressively because crush margins have fallen down to somewhere in the vicinity of about a break-even level as far as the processors are concerned. So there may be a little bit of anxiousness out there that, you know, we could start to see these crush rate numbers kind of drag a little bit relative to last year, and yet we've still got a market that probably ought to be arguably as good for meal demand.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we get a day or so, you know, as we go on in this week past the report, you know, tomorrow and then into Monday. What's your crystal ball saying? How are things going to level out here?
You know, it's right now we're going to be kind of in a drag at this point. You know, when you look at the bean market, the corn market, it really doesn't matter. We've got the November numbers behind us. We don't have any real USDA numbers or any big market-moving numbers now until we see the stocks and production numbers that we get in January. And so we're going to be kind of functioning in a vacuum at this point. I don't know that there's going to be a lot of underlying weakness in the cash market because there's been a fair amount move cash-wise, and then again, producers themselves, the ones that have been collecting LDPs on their corn, and they are just so big this year. You know, it's been anywhere up to close to 50 cents in some places in Illinois, and actually did hit 50 out in the Western Corn Belt. So producers don't have a lot of need to sell anything into the market. So that can kind of give some stability to the spot cash market. But when you're looking at the futures market itself, too, it can lead into a situation, especially with just a little bit of carry, even more so in the corn where there's quite a bit of carry, where there's this continual leakage to the downside in the complex.
Mm-hmm. LDP slipping to 41 cents today. Is that a good deal for farmers?
Oh, on corn, you know, right now with these numbers and the market being down here today, you know, it's the old adage now to want to collect an LDP. You really wait for the next up day. And realistically now, today is a day down. It says, well, now we look and wait until tomorrow. I think anytime you get up into the mid-40s and higher, I think they're a reasonable number to collect. You know, the big thing you're going to have to remember when you collect an LDP, because there are some premiums for those forward sales for corn, that you probably ought to be making some sales on those forward positions, because what could end up happening in this market is that we get a cash market that arguably goes flat. LDPs never get a lot bigger, but those forward prices continue to just drift down to where the current cash market is. So you lose the edge on what those premium bids in the future give you.
Mm-hmm. Quick look at livestock.
Actually, I had a hard down day in futures today, and it was kind of interesting because we had the cattle market that had traded upwards to about $92, and you know, with that, people were expecting this thing to hold, but we turned down and turned down pretty easily. So it's kind of one of those things. It looks like funds really are not willing to chase these livestock markets up here, and that kind of leaves the market with a little bit of a weak bias.
Anything on the outside markets we ought to be paying attention to?
Had another another break in the energy markets here today. Mm-hmm. Crude was down over $1 a barrel. I know natural gas was down at one point here today and ended up on the downside. It looked like about 26 cents a million British thermal units. So warm weather is continuing to undermine the energy market. And I think it might here for a while yet, but people want to remember, don't get too complacent, because the minute cold weather comes after us, we'll probably see these things doing about face and start going higher again.
All right, Dale, thanks a lot.
All right, good talking to you, Jay.
You too. Have a good day. It's Dale Dirkholtz of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois, joining us on the closing market report today. And just checking right now, the crude oil contract for December down $1.13 a barrel at $57.80. Well, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we are going to be talking with meteorologist Peter Levitz, and we'll be talking agricultural weather at that time. Right now, though, a look at meteorologist Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana for the remainder of today. Northern Indiana, a mix of clouds and sunshine. Elsewhere, mostly sunny. Highs ranging 48 in northeast Indiana to near 60. In far southern Illinois, mostly clear tonight, lows 28 in parts of eastern Indiana to near 38 near Lake Michigan. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs 57 in northeastern Indiana to 67 in southwestern Illinois.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson and Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
And now let's take a look at some agricultural news. Of course, we highlighted some of the crop numbers that came out from the USDA this morning. So we talked to Dale Dirkholtz. Following this week's WTO meetings in Europe, U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman has lowered his expectations for next month's key Doha round meeting in Hong Kong.
I am sorry to report that we've not made the progress that we had hoped to make in order to put together a program for the Hong Kong meeting that would enable us to set forth a framework.
European Union officials had already started to drop expectations even before this week's meetings in London and Geneva, citing their last offer on market access reforms as their final offer. It was hoped that Hong Kong would produce a deal by next year, but when U.S. Representatives plan to start writing a new farm bill. But Portman says Hong Kong should still go forward. It may not meet the aspirations once held for it. And Ag Secretary Mike Johann seconded that notion that Hong Kong's still on, but with diminished expectations.
It does appear to me that we will not make as much progress in Hong Kong as we had hoped for. But having said that, this round does extend through 2006. It would be a grave mistake to declare this round at an end at the Hong Kong meeting. There is still an entire year ahead of us when we can work aggressively to have a successful Doha round, and we are committed to doing that.
Joanne's repeated earlier assurances to lawmakers the administration won't try to write a new farm policy bill in Hong Kong. But there is a clear question of timing at work here. Congress must reauthorize both farm policy and presidential trade deal authority in the next 2 years. Another Doha delay could complicate those goals. The aftermath of Hurricane Rita and Katrina, soaring energy costs and falling grain prices continue threatening American agriculture, according to USDA chief economist Keith Collins, who testified before the Senate Ag Committee on Wednesday. Collins pointed out fuel costs and barge rates had already fallen substantially from their highs earlier this year. He said the U.S. farm economy overall was strong enough to absorb higher energy and transportation costs. But some producer groups had different messages for the committee. A National Farmers Union member said ag producers needed help from the federal government to deal with the double whammy of higher energy costs and depressed grain prices. A spokesman for an umbrella group that includes the National Corn Growers Association said Congress should pass a law allowing states to opt out of a federal ban on offshore oil exploration. Meanwhile, Illinois Farm Bureau President Philip Nelson told a House Interior Subcommittee this week that nitrogen fertilizer made from natural gas costs him 70% more this year than it did last. Nelson testified farmers must have access to reliable and affordable energy inputs, which have cost U.S. agriculture more than $6 billion in added expense over the 2003-2004 growing season. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. As we continue on the closing market report, today we're going to get a report from Todd Gleason, who is out at the, as I mentioned, Farm Broadcasters meeting in Kansas City. And he files a report here on a new poll from the Farm Credit Services System, FCS of America, based out of Omaha, Nebraska, polling young producers in four states about their attitudes and opinions on the future of farming. Todd asked the CEO of that organization, Doug Stark, to explain why the poll was done. And I've apparently misplaced that right now. I'm going to have to take a look for where that exactly went. So please be patient for just a second, and we'll have that report up from Todd as soon as I can to locate where I put it. Push the wrong button, and that's a danger sometimes of the business. Okay, there we go. And now let's continue with that report from Todd.
Well, we did a poll of young and beginning producers across the four states in the Midwest to get an idea of what some of their opinions, their issues and challenges are related to their start as in their career in production agriculture. We thought it was important to do that. So first of all, we have a sense of that, but then secondly, we can help promote their thoughts, ideas, and challenges to other audiences to hopefully engage in others in solving some of the challenges they face.
What types of questions did you ask?
Well, one of the things we found out as a result of the survey is one of their biggest challenges really is around access to land. And I don't know that it really is probably any different in the Midwest where we're at as it is any place else in the country. Young people say access to land, there's such a competitive environment around land acquisition with investors, 1031 exchanges coming out of more metropolitan areas. And which has driven prices up, that's a key consideration and concern that they have.
And they're not particularly concerned, if I've read this poll correctly, about access to credit, that is available to them.
No, that's interesting. The poll really revealed that the young producers are saying, I can get the financing and I believe I can pay for it even at the inflated prices as at today. We just can't find it. The competitive environment is so strong there.
And there were some policy implications that came out of this particular poll as well as it pertained to caps on farm program payments that most of these young producers think were driving up the price of farmland.
Yeah, that was a kind of a key outcome that I thought was very interesting is that almost three-fourths of the young people surveyed would favor lower payment limitations on government support. They believe that the payments and the program support has helped drive up the price of farmland, and as a result, they would support that. The other issue that was raised from a policy standpoint, of course, is it's been a long debated issue, and that's the estate tax, the death tax issue. They see that as a challenge in passing it on to future generations and dealing with the implications of that.
It's unlikely that would be an issue that any of the farmers in the nation would have a problem with supporting the elimination of the estate tax. On the other hand, when you talk to other Farm Credit Service Agency CEOs across the nation, is there a difference in what they think the poll might show? For instance, Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota would likely fall in the camp, I would think, with Iowa farmers and South Dakota, Nebraska, Wyoming farmers even, that the crop that the production limits should be lowered, that the cap on those program payments should be lowered. But if you get to the south, do you hear different stories, do you think, from the Farm Credit Service folks down there on and what their young farmers would be saying?
That's a good question. Our survey did not reach that broad. Certainly, I would think that the issues would be relevant across the Midwest, the Corn Belt especially. As you get into the South, there could be some differing viewpoints there. But keep in mind that this is a survey of young and beginning producers, and I would guess that some of those same issues may exist even in the South in terms of payment limitations, access to land, and state tax issues.
Well, why did you go about doing this kind of survey?
Well, first of all, Farm Credit Services universally across the country is dedicated to serving agriculture. About 1% of the total population now is really involved in agriculture, and it's diminishing. And bringing young people into it, because it's so capital intensive, is a challenge. And so our goal was, because of those dynamics, we see where we have an interest in the future of agriculture and want to serve those that are coming into it, wanted to find out what they're feeling and thinking.
I'd like to switch topics just a little bit on Farm Credit Services and discuss another issue very quickly with you. There's a lot of discussion here at the convention, and over time there's been much discussion about the change in rural population and the needs of rural Americans, the urbanization, relatively speaking, of rural America, where you have not farmers, but you have a rural lifestyle. Does Farm Credit Service look at potential lending practices that might be pointed not simply at farmers, but that at rural lifestyle, so that the folks that might be moving out to the country and purchasing property, small, you know, 5, 10, 20-acre plots, where they might have horses, they might have some limited livestock. Have you looked at those issues and what that might mean for the future of Farm Credit Services?
Yeah, Todd, thanks for bringing that up. That's really an important issue to us. And I'll go a little different direction, because to some degree we can serve a segment of that today. But the Farm Credit System is engaged in a system-wide strategic initiative we call the Horizons Project. That is coming together this fall, and the results of that is going to be released in early spring, at January, February timeframe. One of the things, the research that we found that gets exactly to your point, that agriculture has changed. The demographics in rural America has changed. We believe that the Farm Credit System can play a key role in serving agriculture in rural America, even in a broader context. As agriculture has changed, we think there are some incremental changes to the Farm Credit Regulations and Act that would assist us in providing those kind of services in a changing rural America.
I know by law that you have to serve a certain need, so what kind of incremental changes would you be looking to have? And maybe you don't know those yet, or you can't release them because this is coming out in the spring.
Yeah, most of that will be revealed in the spring, but certainly things that are evolved around the rural lifestyle. Even farmers and ranchers today that have diversified their income streams, their holdings. Many farmers and ranchers are involved in many other different businesses and enterprises that in a large part even support their farming operation. And then you have the living segment that have many off-farm jobs in smaller and rural communities that we believe are very vital to the service and welfare of rural America.
Doug, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Doug Stark is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Farm Credit Services of America, based out of Omaha, Nebraska. I'm Todd Gleason at the National Association of Farm Broadcasters Convention in Kansas City.
And joining us on the telephone right now, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing, who is out at the elevator in Lexington. And good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Well, let's take a look, first of all, at maybe your reaction to some of the crop production numbers that came out this morning.
Well, they were on the high side of the guesses, of course, but really nothing that we hadn't seen out of the private estimates prior to the report. So I think that's pretty much the way the market reacted today, that, there's nothing friendly there by any means, but nothing to get real excited about on the bear side either.
Mm-hmm. What about your expectations on basis levels over the next week?
Well, the basis has continued to improve here in both corn and beans. And in the corn side of it, it's partially at least due to the barge freight coming down, and we've seen that barge freight actually now is lower than it was a year ago at this time. And I guess I would expect that to continue, or at least the freight hold stable, and maybe some of the demand pick up, so the bases continue to improve some. On the soybean side of it, we made some pretty big strides, and it's mostly because of the fact that the processors are needing to get some beans into process, and the bin doors are shut pretty tight right now. And I guess I'd expect that on the bean side as well, to see some continued improvement, although we've made enough strides here recently that we may not have to do a whole lot more in the next few weeks.
LDP pricing slipping to 41 cents, I guess, today. Still recommending that farmers take advantage of that?
I think so, but I believe with the market down today that it's probably in your best interest to wait and see what it is tomorrow if you have it taken at this point.
All righty. And today's prices from you?
Yeah, for the corn, we're $1.74, and soybeans, $5.62.
All right, thanks a lot, Bill.
Thank you, Jay.
All right, talk to you later. Bill Mayer from Roach Ag Marketing joining us to take a look at the cash grain markets today from his office at the Elevator in Lexington, Illinois. It's 2:31, just a tad late, but Jim Meadows is here with AM 580 News.
Thank you, Jay. A nitric acid spill at a University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign laboratory has injured a visiting researcher. The U of I isn't releasing the name of the woman who was treated at a local hospital after she was splashed with the acid. Spokeswoman Mayor Payne says the chemical was unsecured inside a box the researcher was opening at Burnside's Research Lab on Pennsylvania Avenue this morning. Urbana firefighters tried to neutralize the 2.5 liters of acid, but an outside firm had to be called in to finish the cleanup. Payne says it could be Monday before the lab is reopened. A member of George Ryan's security detail has wrapped up 2 days on the witness stand in the former Illinois governor's racketeering and fraud trial. State Police Master Sergeant Todd Borisi came in for a tough grilling from defense attorneys this morning. They claim his memories of things that happened when he was Ryan's bodyguard more than a decade ago are untrustworthy. Mourners packed an Evansville funeral home to bid farewell to a 4-year-old boy killed in Sunday's tornado. Today's funeral for Isaiah Blaylock was the first for any of the 22 victims of the storm in Evansville and adjacent Warwick County. Meanwhile, Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels says he'll return to the Evansville area next week to make sure that tornado relief efforts are going smoothly. Daniels also has signed an executive order allowing up to 15 days of paid leave for any state employee whose home was destroyed or damaged. Health departments around Illinois are helping the state test its ability to distribute medicine in the event of a biological crisis. Today's statewide exercise is the precursor to a drill that Champaign County health officials practiced in September, when hundreds of volunteers were given simulated anthrax vaccines. An 18-year-old was sentenced to 22 years in prison after pleading guilty to kidnapping a Decatur man, forcing him in a car trunk, and driving around. Jonas Bond pleaded guilty to aggravated kidnapping, armed robbery, and aggravated vehicular hijacking. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
And this is the Closing Market Report on AM 580. I'm Jay Pierce. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather, meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Well, what are you seeing in your radar screen, satellite pictures, et cetera, of interest today?
Well, of interest, I guess, is nice weather with just one brief interruption over the weekend. We have, we're looking at a pattern that favors milder temperatures through the weekend and then turning cooler next week. The way it goes is we start out with cool weather tonight and tomorrow, and temperatures starting off in the morning tomorrow somewhere in the low to mid-30s and across much of central Illinois and northwestern and even some southern areas, but then rising rapidly up into the 60s. We may even see temperatures approaching 70 tomorrow afternoon. The warm weather continues into Saturday. Then we got a cold front coming by with some showers and possible thunderstorms. That's probably going to get in there maybe late Saturday afternoon, but more likely Saturday night and Sunday. By Sunday morning, though, by late morning, it's clearing with a brisk northwesterly wind, cooler air coming in, and we go into Sunday and Monday with fair weather and seasonal temperatures, and then another cold front about Tuesday means a little reinforcement of the cooler air, and about the only cool weather we see relative to the normals will be about midweek tomorrow, and even then we see milder air coming back. So temperatures averaging well above normal this weekend, a little cooler the middle of next week. A few showers, mostly late Saturday, early Sunday, and maybe again ahead of the front on Tuesday, but I think those will be negligible. So pretty good weather, all told.
All right, Peter, thanks for the good news.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Peter Levitt is agriculture meteorologist who joins us on the closing market report on Thursday.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
And I'm Jay Pierce. Be sure to join us tomorrow morning for our first look at the numbers on the pre-opening commodity market report. We'll look at the overnight trade and get some predictions on what tomorrow holds. That's at 8:49 tomorrow morning. And, of course, you can find all the agricultural information on our website, will.uiuc.edu.
It's 2:37 Central Time. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 49 degrees at 2:37 Central Time. Stocks are higher after getting off to a sluggish start on news of a record trade deficit in September and an unexpected rise in weekly jobless claims. Both the Dow Industrials and the NASDAQ are posting gains despite concerns about General Motors and a disappointing sales forecast from Cisco Systems. The Dow is up 106 points at 10,652, the NASDAQ 19 higher at 2195, and the S&P 500 up 11 at 1232. People who have seen it say there's been some upward movement in the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index for November. According to media reports, the index rose to 79.9 from 74.2 last month. Economists had expected a reading of 76. Nissan Motor Company is moving its North American headquarters from California to the Nashville area. The Japanese automaker currently has two plants in Tennessee, a manufacturing headquarters in Smyrna, and an engine plant in Deckard, and employs more than 7,000 people in Tennessee. The price of gold closed in London at $466.60 an ounce, up $2.95 from yesterday. The Zurich late price was $467.65, a gain of $5.10 an ounce. That's business news.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Verde Gallery, currently featuring Into the Mystic, an exploration of art and spirituality, which includes local, national, and international artists, plus other events. Also featuring a bluegrass jam every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Verde Gallery, a fine art gallery, cafe, and newsroom, 17 East Taylor, downtown Champaign. On the web at verdant-systems.com. Be inspired.
They say no two fingerprints are alike, but my daughter's fingerprints sure look similar to mine.
While the intricate details of an individual fingerprint are unique, pattern types and the overall size, shape, and spacing of the ridges in the pattern are all inherited traits.
So you mean that my daughter's fingerprints include a lot of whorls because mine include a lot of whorls?
You got it.
What kinds of minute details distinguish my fingerprints from my daughter's?
To identify the correct person behind a large world with wide spacing, one must look at the fine details, such as slight differences in various landmarks of the world pattern, how different ridges break or fork, and the shape of ridge edges.
Okay, but how is it that some features of fingerprints are inherited while these details are not?
Because fingerprints are produced by a combination of genetic programming and random chance. Early in gestation, a fetus develops smooth, raised pads on the fingers, palms, and feet. These are called volar pads. At about week 10, these pads cease growing and begin to regress. It may be that the hands continue to grow, resulting in the pads stretching out. Anywhere between about week 10 to week 15, the early ridges of one's fingerprints begin to form. The ridges appear on the surface of the hand by week 16. This timing of ridge formation is one feature that is genetically programmed, and hence, if your parents have a lot of whorls on their fingertips, you're likely to possess a lot of whorls too. However, the intricate details of your whorls are left to chance.
This moment of science comes from Indiana University with underwriting from the Office of the Chancellor.
Today's program was prepared by Michelle Ross with help from Terry Reed at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. I'm Don Glass.